Dick hit on an interesting topic about Dopplers, the difference between 4 antennas and 8 antennas. I wanted to say a few things, but I guess we ran out of time. 2RW is still monitoring WJ2B.
So Barry, you can type to that lower line and get your message up there. Yeah, you're probably not low enough. Yeah, you're probably not getting the bottom of the page. Because there are like 4 comments sent to Hi Barry. Yeah, so somebody, okay. It's underneath the text, or the messages you're seeing, there should be like a blue line separating it, and then a small one-line text box, and you type right in there.
From the TechNet to ComputerNet.
ZY2H. There it is. Hi, this is a test. Very good, Barry. We got you. You're hitting the 375 from Rockaway.
The K50's turned off, so we have to be hitting it on 375.
Yeah, I know he's got a tall tower over there. That's a good shot, though.
Hey, Lou, how do you sign out now? You just X out and that's it? This is WS2N.
See, I'm on kind of a different page now. The other page I was on, there's a logout. There should be a logout on the top or near the top of the page. You just click on logout.
Okay, yeah, I wanted to do it proper. 73, very, very good. You're going to bring up the same thing every week, you know, or this is, what is the URL change from week to week?
No, the URL should be the same, and as long as it's used every week, it should stick around. I think there's a 90-day idle. If it's not used, it'll go away, but that's plenty, so it should be okay. Yeah, I see your call on there, too. In fact, let me have an old message as I scrolled up. Okay, night all, and 2MB clear, very cool. Yeah. Did you type something in there yet, Paul?
No, not yet. I was just figuring things out first. Let me try something.
Open fire. Open fire.
Thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
Visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
Set tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL Amateur Radio Repeater System.
K50
KD2CXK listening, Honolulu. How are you? Kilo Delta 2, Charlie X-ray Kilo. Name here is Craig, Charlie Romeo Alpha India Golf. I'm in Honolulu, Hawaii. I'm actually a member of the Limar Club. That's just on vacation. Sorry I missed the net tonight. KD2CXK, nothing heard. Hey, Jason hailing me, you are about 65% noise. I'm not sure whose side that's on. Copy, QSL. I copy on a handheld. You were a little better on that transmission. I'm sitting here on Waikiki Beach watching the sunset. How bad does it get? Well, it's only mine for another week and a half. And I'm back in Queens. I hear you guys are having a heat wave. What's going on over there? We've been having about 85 in the daytime. Today was about 80 and a cool breeze. But how bad, you know, it's like that every day, I'm told. I know, right? It sucks. What's going on? Is it hit 100 yet? Over to you. Oh, that's a relief. Yeah, my father-in-law is almost 90, and he said he couldn't even go out. So it was bad for his health. So I'm glad that it's not what as bad as I thought it was. So was it a good net? Good net tonight? How long did it go? Oh, I wonder why that came up as a subject. Giggle, giggle. Yeah, I think we should be talking more about that. Yeah, I stumbled on a bunch of repeater links here. There's actually one that when you key up over here, it's a 70-centimeter repeater. You're actually talking out 128 nodes, I think, in about 25 or 30 states, including Vancouver, which is really amazing. They had a weather check-in last night, and I'm lying in bed, and we're getting people from Vancouver, from Louisiana, all over. Now, I don't think this repeater link even comes anywhere near the East Coast, but they've got it pretty well established here. All the islands are covered here. Over to you. Sorry, that dropped out. I don't know how they're interconnected, but they're definitely transparently linked. I key up on RF, and it seems to propagate out all these repeaters. They're probably connected through the internet or something like that. Well, before I got on the plane, I took a Yaesu VX6, which I ironically bought at the Outdoor Ham Fest a couple of weeks back, and programmed it with all the repeaters on the islands in Hawaii. There's two in the bag, and I'm scanning, and this one's really noisy. I mean, it's really people keying up left and right, so explored a little more, made some QSOs, and somebody who came on was the node operator, station operator, and told me about it, so I was really excited.
Yeah, okay, go.
KD2CXK. Yeah, there are a whole lot of repeaters, and this seemed to be the only one with anybody talking on it so far, but it's only been 4 days. Actually, I threw my 817 in the bag and the tuner and some long wire, and I'm hiking Mauna Kea on Saturday. I'm going to try and do some QRP DX up there. I hear that's a favorite thing amongst hams, so it's one of the reasons I made the trip. I wanted to try that, see if I can get some altitude sickness and some QSOs at the same time. All right, over to you. 73, do you have a wonderful night? And KD2CXK, ATQICS, KD2CXK, clear.
at 830 WQVL repeater system.
Decided to go independent. Then I worked in the hospital for a while. worked for Columbia Press for 5 years, and a lot of politics there, working in a hospital. I think you probably have a lot where you are, too. You got to keep your head down, mind your own business, and what you see is what you see, and keep it to yourself. So, Carl, it's a good day to start. When you get off early, you start at 6, you must get off by 3 o'clock, right?
Yeah, I get off at 4, actually, because I work a 4-day, 10-hour-a-day shift, and excitement here in Stamford this morning. Looks like a fire going on. But yeah, so it's 4 days, 6 to 4, and there you go. Well, if you work on MRIs, you're an RF too, aren't you?
Yeah, the technology MRI is it's amazingly simple but complicated. The basic technology is pretty simple, and you're basically getting a signal from the patient, unlike X-ray where you penetrate and look at detect your other end. And I go back to, actually, the first thing I worked on was the EMI. If you remember what EMI was, they made the first CAT scanner used on people, in vitro equipment, and it's pretty slow. It took 2 minutes to make one slice. Now you can make 64 slices in less than a second. It's amazing watching technology change. I'm sure a lot of technology changes your business too, right, Carl? Right, Ken?
Yeah, very good. Well, I've been in this a long time. When I started, it was 2-inch tape and black and white cameras. So where have we gone? And one of the things I'm involved in is graphics. And that has that's grown in leaps and bounds where we are with that stuff now. You know, automatic updates and all this sort of stuff. Very sophisticated as well. MRIs are interesting, though. That's amazing stuff. So my question would be, how did you learn all of this? Was it on-the-job training, or how'd you get into this?
Bringing it out here really helped. It really did help, because I went into service. I was a field-ready repairman over at NAM. So I got an MOS that allowed me to get a equivalent associate degree. When I got out of service, I went for a job with NR and Data 100, all the real tape, the digital tape stuff, key punch to tape machines and stuff like that. So I worked in the old computers that started with 8K of memory, took a whole room. It was donuts. So I go back a long ways there, too. But I saw a lot of changes. And as far as photography, I used to take a lot of black and white film, like Panatomic. I used to take a lot of pictures walking around the city, and then I started skydiving. I took pictures of skydiving. Then everything switched to digital, and digital has its ups and downs. It's quick. You don't have to develop it and whatnot, but it's improved a lot. The original digital was pretty poor quality. Now it's pretty advanced, and I guess with the image enhancement you have involved in that, it makes a big difference. So you're working on that modern technology, modern filming, which is also interesting work. And I guess you get to see a lot of news media that we don't get to see. It gets filtered, I guess. Back over to you, Ken.
You're very good. Well, there is new stuff coming up. I just don't know whether or not it's ever going to be adopted. We had some work with 3D in the past few years. The next thing is what's known as UHD, Some people call it 4K, which is ultra high definition. I don't know if there's going to be a market for it, but you never know. So anyway, speaking of work, I'm rolling in. So nice to meet you. Let me make sure I got it right. It's WV2ZGZ. Boy, that's a mouthful. Even on a Morse key, that's a mouthful. I know all about Z, but ZGZ. Da-da, did it. Very good. All right, Charlie. Listen, enjoy the day. Maybe I'll catch you again. I'm off and on at this hour. So WP2ZGZ from N2KZ. 73's dit. And as one of my buddies says, stay on the right side of the grass.
Okay. I don't understand what snake said, right side of the grass. I guess that's a call it is. Anyway, it's been a pleasure meeting you, and I hope you enjoy your day. Interesting work. It's good to hear from you and understand there's other things coming up. I think the high-definition, ultra-high-definition stuff is interesting. The only problem is buying the equipment on the receiving end. I think that will be the killer. People aren't willing to spend the money. Price of TVs have gone down quite a bit, competitive market. Anyway, Ken, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. I'm glad I woke you up, or you woke me up in the morning. I'm going to 7-Eleven, get my coffee, and then get to the warehouse and play with some stuff and throw some stuff away and look at what's good. You know, I have circuit boards and things like that that we repair. Instead of buying new circuit boards, we repair them, you know. And that makes financially more useful. Time is money. And money is money. Anyway, Carl, nice meeting you. WA2ZGZ, we'll be clear. Thank you very much. Good morning to you.
W2HCB, W2HCB, N2ZEB.
But
you know, most of the dust is going to be contained. It's not like I'm pulling down sheetrock. That's what makes the real mess.
Greg? Greg, over to you, Greg.
Yeah, what happened there was there was some kind of, you know, remember that Intermod sound we had? It was doing that the whole time he transmitted. I switched to the 850. I was actually able to hear him, so it wasn't coming through the 850. I heard him a little bit, but I had a nightmarish weekend.
Oh, tell us. We want to know the Monday morning dramas.
It wasn't a good weekend, although I didn't let it get me down, but it definitely wiped out most people. The sergeant on the 4th, the cops showing up, you know, in the neighborhood before we even started. That kind of, like with the fireworks, that kind of ended all that. And then we were like playing cat and mouse with the cops there with the fireworks, but what are you going to do? It was between me and the neighbors, and we have a big neighborhood for that, so that kind of ended that stuff. Somebody complained. And then we went to take out the boat yesterday. The voltage was high it was reading, the voltage was reading high. So I turned some stuff on in the boat, everything I could put on. You know, I didn't think it would damage stuff. I just figured it would draw down the voltage a little bit so the batteries wouldn't get beat up as bad. The batteries exploded. They exploded like an M80. So something must have caused an arc on one of the connections or something like that. But anyway, batteries explode. My cousin tows us back in. The guy who runs the ramp catches me at the ramp there, and he says, oh, you need a permit, so I got to pay whatever is $85 for a permit to use the ramp. He backs me down the ramp, and he goes, yeah, stay to this side. I go down that side of the ramp. As I pull forward to get out of the ramp, there was like some kind of I-beam or some stupid thing in the water. It caught the frame of the trailer and tore it in half. Tore my trailer in half at the boat ramp, completely in half.
Drama. So that's it? You couldn't get the boat out of the water?
I then called my cousin who towed me in, and I went and grabbed his trailer, and I got my boat home, and then I went back to the boat, to the ramp, with my truck, and I hooked up to my trailer frame, and then I winched the wheels, the whole wheel assembly and axle assembly out of the water. Got that up on land, got the trailer up on land, jacked up the trailer on top of the axle assembly. It's like its own carrier unit that holds the four wheels. So I got that up onto the trailer, up onto it, and roped it onto the trailer, strapped it onto the trailer, so I was able to slowly roll the trailer home. Now I'm going to have to see if I can actually put this thing back together.
You mean you didn't drag the trailer down the expressway until it just disintegrated?
No, because that trailer wasn't worth keeping, that other one that I disintegrated. It was old, it was a cheapie, it wasn't worth it. But this one, not after I just did axles, all new brakes, all new stainless steel brake lines, which are now torn in half. But that sucked. That really just was not a good thing. But I mean, oh my God, I just couldn't believe that stupid thing.
So this thing tore your trailer up while putting the boat in, or while by trying to pull the boat out?
Just moving it forward. If the boat was on there, it probably wouldn't have happened. What happened was, if the boat was on there, I wouldn't have been able to get up. I wouldn't have been able to, like, pull it forward. Without the boat on there, you know, when I was repositioning the trailer, I backed down, and then I said, all right, let me get it a little closer to the boat. So I went the boat forward to shift the trailer closer to the dock. you know, and that balsa, boom, the trailer, it just, bam, it just tore it in half, like without even a warning. This stupid thing, it caught, it actually buckles. There's like a frame on the carrier unit that carries the four wheels. It actually caught that frame, bent it like in the middle, like buckled it. And when it buckled it, it snapped the U-bolts that hold that those wheel carriers on.
transmit through the link. So, to repeat Rich's question, what did the owner of the boat ramp say when you tore up your trailer?
I always feel a bounce right to that thing. That was his word.
Didn't get exactly what he said, but he knew about this and he didn't warn you?
Nope. And I guess it's because the reason my trailer caught it was because it's like a square beam that I have that carries the axle. It's a little unusual from other trailers. With another trailer, might have hit it and got lucky and popped over it, where mine wasn't between the trailer weighing 1,500 pounds, and I guess that square tubular frame that's fairly low, about the height of your axles, it actually would have caught my axle and probably bent my axle if it didn't. I don't know. I may just pursue it. I may look into that a little further, because that was pretty ridiculous that happened.
Rich, I don't know about you, but if he's got an underwater obstruction that the owner and operator of the boat ramp knew about it, and he was not warned, and his trailer was wrecked, Kramer, make sure you get pictures of everything before you repair anything, and keep every itemized bill, because I think you have an action against the owner-operator. Rich?
I don't know what you got, Kramer.
Other than a whole lot of bad luck.
But if it's actually going to go after
the fact that the guy came running, you said he came running out to you and wanted his fee, his launching ramp permit fee, and then told you where to back your trailer down, I don't know. Sounds to me like you might want to go and pay this guy a visit. Put your arm around him and tell him of your Italian heritage. And to be in Mobile.
So you actually paid to get your boat ripped apart?
Yeah, it was the trailer. Pretty disheartening. I mean, I put a lot of time and money into that stupid trailer. But I have to tell you, that trailer, the way it towed was fantastic. You didn't even feel. I must have just got lucky the way I positioned the boat on there. You didn't even feel anything back there. I never trailed anything that comfortably before. And when I put the boat on my cousin's trailer, the tongue weight was extremely light, and it made the truck extremely bouncy. Over every bump, you felt the pulling and twisting and shaking and everything. With that trailer that I had, nothing. You felt nothing. It was perfect.
Skeevy needs to hear all this.
I'm listening.
Did you make coffee all over the dashboard yet?
Be right back. I'm on call, so I'm on the phone. I'll be back. Johnny Drabba.
Big old alternator driven by a belt.
except it's built with like a basically like a spark arrestor type of thing. So it can't arc in the engine compartment, which can become full of gas fumes and explode. And your starter is the same way, just like a car. In fact, you could take a car starter and put it on there, or a car opener and put it on there, but then you risk the spark being exposed to gas fumes. So you try to stay marine. But my other motor has an alternator on it without a belt, and that's the way it was made from the factory. So I actually have an entire spare setup. So I'm just going to go get the belt for the other side and take that one off and put it up on the other one is what I'm going to do. It could have actually even possibly been caused by poor battery terminals. You know, the connections might have been not making a very good connection, and if that was the case, it could possibly allow the voltage to go higher like that, and then that would also possibly explain the arc that made the battery explode, because the battery wouldn't just explode unless there was an arc while it was producing its little hydrogen from being charged a little too much or being used.
Hello? I missed a lot of... Before you started trying to remedy the situation by turning on all of your 12-volt appliances.
I missed a lot.
Steve,
you missed a lot, all right.
First, his boat was overvoltaged, so he exploded his batteries. He then gets towed to the dock, and there is a submerged object which tore apart the bottom of his trailer. And the cops playing tag with him 4th of July, so he couldn't play with his fireworks. That's the summary. Kramer, think about your electricity. A loose battery connection will give you a high resistance, therefore dropping your voltage, not increasing it. See?
Oh, boy.
No, it's actually the other way around. It'll give a high resistance, so that would drop the voltage coming out of the battery, but it's trying to charge the battery. So maybe it would... the alternator wouldn't be loaded down by the battery, and it would cause it to go up a little bit.
What's logic from being an electrician? Steve?
Oh, boy.
You know, it could, if you think about it. You know, your alternator puts out 14.4 or whatever it's supposed to put out. If your battery terminal is dropping on and off, it could allow the voltage to kind of freewheel a little bit. But I don't know, it probably was just a bad regulator that was putting out too much. Aggravating. But, all right, I'm at the shop, so I'll just listen out for a minute, and then I'll clear.
Well, why don't you clear so we can talk about you?
Oh, it made for interesting conversation, boy. When I wait till I got to get some better pictures of the boat trailer. I took it with my little Nextel style phone, the little flip phone. I made a video, it's all I really had with me at the time. But you wouldn't believe how it tore this trailer in half.
Yeah, well, having that, like, 2,000 horsepower truck dragging that trailer out up off the ramp probably didn't help either. If you had been towing it with a normal vehicle, you might have felt it hook before you ripped the bottom of the trailer out.
Yeah, a six by three square tubular beam buckled. I buckled that thing. I pulled it at least a foot. You know, it's like buckled.
Rich, no traffic. I'm at the tunnel already, so 73 into ZEP. I'm at the crossover ramp, and I almost got smacked by a Toyota by some guy sleeping.
So, remind me not to invite him when we rendezvous.
I don't even want to, like, tie up alongside of him for fear of, like, explosions, catching fire, sinking.
Do it when you have a boat you want to get rid of.
I'll tell you. I have to commend you.
to just put a bullet in your brain after this weekend is just amazing to me.
Well, I'm just a happy idiot. Ignorance is bliss. I never let anything get to me. I just do my thing, and whatever. I do my thing, and that's it.
Just can't imagine how you didn't feel the trailer get hooked on this thing as you were rolling it back up out of the water, and you didn't stop immediately. You had to have felt it. There's no way that you didn't feel it get hooked, unless you were doing 60 miles an hour out of the water.
I kind of pull forward fast, not extremely fast, but fairly quickly, and it was just a quick bang. Boom, you heard the bang, but it was too late. Once you heard the bang, that was it. And I would say I pulled with 2 feet past that, and then I stopped and looked. The trailer was on the ground. That was it. That ended it. I'll get it back together. All right, let me clear. I'll walk into work, and that's it. I got to grab the paychecks and try to get my truck out of this spot that's in here. Maybe I'll drive it into 3 other trucks while doing that. All right, I'm going to clear, and you guys can continue by talking about me.
Okay, be careful walking.
So, mister, how was your weekend? Probably pales in comparison to that.
Totally pales. Totally pales. It was hot. And, I took the boat out on Saturday. Ran around a little bit. Got stuck with it. Had to get towed in. Did I tell you about that? But I didn't run off the end of the trip. The trailer's actually the best part this year. I am like a pro putting it on and off by myself. But yes, I had to get towed in. I wasn't that far away. I was just running around in the bay.
Okay, was it a issue that you care to talk about?
Yeah, something with the gas delivery. Like I was gas starved, so I opened everything up again. There was a little junk inside, not a lot, but I must have fouled out one of the jets because I just could not drop it into gear. Kept stalling on me. Could have been a combination of that too. I might not have, the neutral safety switch, I might not have had that adjusted properly. So I messed around with that. And then I'm thinking also that maybe the accelerator pump I'm having trouble with. Just another thing that I noticed, and I couldn't get the thing to stall out yesterday. I ran it for 3 hours. It's typical of these Rochesters. You could run it in your driveway for 3 hours, nothing will happen, but you take it out on the water, and 25 minutes later, it's bogging out on you. So, some kind of pump adjustment-related issue that I'll need your service for. I need you to go out with me and run around next to me.
All right, well, you just got to maybe come on down by me, and we'll go up and down the unobstructed ramp and make sure that we don't rip off the bottoms of our trailers and do something there. Sonny Boy was supposed to take the boat out yesterday. He had made plans with his friends, and that all fell through, so that put him in a wonderful mood. Saturday was a lot of fun. We had a lot of people. We had live entertainment for a good amount of time, and the best thing about it was that there could be no complaints from next door because there was a graduation party going on the other side of his property. And had he called the cops on one, he would have had to call the cops on both, and then he would have had two neighbors that would want to burn his house down. went through a couple of 100 pounds of ice, then turned around and still got plenty more. Oh, I guess that's what this was all about. Still got plenty more Sam Adams. So you'll have to stop by this afternoon and have 3 or 4 glasses of it with me.
Terrific. All right. Interestingly enough, the towboat U.S. guy that came to pick me up is the same guy that picked me up a couple of years ago. I had the dog with me. And I was actually smart about this. I'm not going to get into being dumb like somebody else, you know. But I went out early. I went out like 7:30. And they don't check stickers apparently till 9 o'clock. So I came in through the back fence. I'll show you one day how that all works out. I launched. There was no one there. There was like 3 or 4 boats that had trailered in that launched. And I'd say I was on the water by 7:45. My plan was to come off because I knew it was going to be hot. I'll come off like 12:30, 1 o'clock, which was about high tide for us. And I was on the way out when it crapped out on me. So it was like right off Sea Cliff, Glen Cove Creek, right there. I wasn't that far up. It was a little hot for easy, but we did okay. I reprogrammed my depth finder while I was waiting. It wasn't too terrible. Like I said, I could get it started, but as soon as I dropped it into gear, it would fizzle out on me.
And you can't start it in gear, right?
That's what that neutral switch does. It shuts you off. It'll crank, but it won't kick over. I checked that. I thought that might have been. I thought it might have been something with the linkage, like I was in gear and it wouldn't start for me. But that wasn't it. I was able to get it started.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, our cruiser had that switch set up so that when you went from forward, from neutral to forward or neutral to reverse, it actually kills the engine for a split second to really drop the RPMs. It saves wear and tear on the drivetrain and the U-joints. And then as soon as you're fully in gear, the switch reconnects. And the theory was that the engine would be able to continue to, rotate for half to three-quarter of a turn with no power on it, with no ignition, while it dropped into gear, and then it would pick right back up as soon as the switch was re-engaged as you got fully into gear.
Correct, and you're exactly right why it works like that, so that it doesn't slam into the gear. It lulls it for a couple of seconds, and I know that. And, I tried turning up the idle a little bit, because I just wanted to get underway and make my way back to the ramp, but I wouldn't do it. It was bogging out on me. I did change, like I said, I opened everything up, cleaned everything out again. There was very little gunk in there. I found a lot more last time I went out. Very little. I changed the filter that's at the bottom of the fuel pump also. I had changed that, but there was a little residue in there too, so I changed that out again. And like I said, I was looking at the accelerator pump. And one other thing that I did. When I took the, let me let it drop a second. When I took the carburetor apart last time, as I told you, I had some crap accumulated in there. This is with the new load of gas. I adjusted the float, and I might have had that out a little too far. It might have been clamping down. One thing I didn't think of when I was setting it up was the boat angle, and I think that, that angle might have been enough to actually starve the carburetor. And it's hard to see unless you open it up right then and there if it's starved, because that's how it was acting, like it wasn't filling up. But as soon as it would level off and I would start it in idle, the bowl would fill up again.
That switch normally is closed. It's in a normally closed position, and then when you actuate your linkage, your shift linkage, there's a little dimple or something that hits the switch and breaks the contact, which is what kills the ignition. But you're saying that it would just instantly die as if you turned off the key when you put it into gear, or it would run, be in gear, idling, but you couldn't throttle up at all once it was in gear?
I drop it in gear. The propeller would turn 4 or 5 times, and then it would die. And as I throttled up, it was like it was gas starved and then stall.
It would continue to run. If you just left it idling in forward gear, it would continue to run?
No. If I would leave it in neutral, it would run.
But it's so gas starved. Sounds to me like that switch might have gone bad. That whatever, whenever it's getting actuated, the contacts may not be making cleanly again, and you're losing ignition power, which would give you that type of a symptom where it would go. Because if it runs in neutral, unless you're only running on one cylinder, once you put the load of the prop on it, it really shouldn't make a difference. It should continue to idle. The only thing that you've changed, other than putting a load on the engine, is you moved that electrical component that's hooked up to your ignition system.
That's correct. I can do it, you know, on land. I don't like spinning it out. I just engage it and, you know, disengage it to make sure it is working and it doesn't stall out down. But with the load on, it's enough to drop the RPM, I guess, too far down. Again, this was an area where I had to do some wire repairs, so it's possible something came loose or something is corroded, or both, or the switch is no good. The switch looks to me to be more mechanical in nature. It's only got 1 or 2 leads on it, a ground and a pause, that's it. And, you know, it looks like a relay, just what you said. Looks like a relay. And it engages either forward or reverse, and it's got a dimple in the center that releases it, just as you explained. So I'll look at that, and it's worth looking at, and probably even changing it out. I'm sure it's not that big a deal.
K6DP says.
Now, what's going on? Stevie, I believe that switch is held on to the bracket by, what, 2 screws? You could remove that switch for a test. Remove the switch for a test and